I'll just say, to begin with, this is an interview with Gretchen van Kooken on the 8th of April, 1983. We're interviewing in her house, and I'm Laura Smail. What was your maiden name?
My maiden name was Kohler, Gretchen Kohler.
K-O-H-L-E-R?
Mm-hmm. And both of my parents came from Germany separately.
Uh-huh.
And met over here in the early 1900s. My mother came from northern Germany. My father came from the Black Forest area. And I was born in South Dakota.
And what did your father...
My father had a real estate business, estate and insurance. Mm-hmm. In a very small town.
Where did you go to college?
I went to high school in the small town, went through school there and graduated. And my mother had died, and then after I graduated, when I was 16, I went to Milwaukee and lived with an aunt there. And went to Miss Brown's School of Business there, because I had to earn some money, and this seemed to be a good way to get started at that.
Now, what date were you born?
1912, February 1912.
So you came to Milwaukee...
In 1928, right after I graduated.
I see.
From high school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And went to Miss Brown's School of Business and worked for my tuition there.
Mm-hmm.
I used to clean all the typewriters that the people who were supposed to clean hadn't cleaned,
uh-huh.
So every Saturday morning I was over there cleaning typewriters that weren't marked off on the chart. That was part of my job, is working for my tuition.
Yeah.
And so then I also went to the extension over there and chalked up, I think, 21 credits before I left Milwaukee.
University extension.
At night. I took English and German at the extension after work.
Did you know, was Jake Boischer there then?
Or I don't know.
I
can't remember.
Carl Baumann, I know that.
I wouldn't have known them.
Mm.
No, but Malcolm McLean was there. He was an English teacher there, and he was always a pioneer, I think, in whatever he was, wherever he was. And he taught a semester of English in a way that he felt prepared people for really doing research, and he got us very well acquainted with the Milwaukee Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was marvelous that they had open stacks, and he wanted us to do papers focused on something, so we had to focus on career.
Yeah.
And I remember writing a paper on college teaching, of all things, because that was what I decided I'd focus on, even though I had no idea that I'd ever be doing it.
Really?
And I never did do it.
But
it did become interesting to me along the way, because I remember distinctly, and the only thing I remember of the paper is that I read some things about that women had written about college teaching, and one of them complained and waxed bitter because of the, she didn't say it, but obvious discrimination in pay for women teachers. They weren't making progress on the ladder. All of this was new to me, you understand. I hadn't even heard of assistant professors, associate professors, professors.
Mm-hmm.
But she had written something that I read along the way, and this phrase has always stuck in my mind. She complained and waxed bitter, and she said that women complained and waxed bitter along the way of her study on women in college teaching.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. This was about 1930.
It wasn't a part of your getting a training in business to go to extension.
Oh, no,
that
no,
was,
no, no. This,
that was on your
I
own.
I wanted to go to college because when I graduated from high school in South Dakota, that was the year the state had given two scholarships to each high school up to then.
Mm-hmm.
And my very close friend and I would have got those two scholarships. which I probably wouldn't have been able to use anyway because it would have been to one of the state colleges and I probably never could have afforded to go even with the scholarship. But that year the state was so poverty stricken that it stopped giving the scholarships. And also that year my father's business practically failed. And
so that was a real blow to you then?
Well, nothing was a blow to me then. I was too young to take anything as a blow, but it was, I'm sure that it did change the direction of my life, because instead of going off to college, I went off to live with my aunt in Milwaukee.
Which so, you did in order to go to the business school, is that?
I went to live with her because my mother had died, and my father just could not really take care of me, and my aunt wanted me to come live with her, and this is the way it went. So he was back there struggling with his business, and I was living with my aunt in Milwaukee, really with no goal in mind.
No.
Just trying to exist. And first of all, I worked for $5 a week on Saturdays for a judge who was, at that moment, a justice of the Supreme Court. His name is Doerfler, Christian Doerfler, D-O-E-R-F-L-E-R. And they, Mr. and Mrs. Doerfler, had a big house out in Wauwatosa, which was their home. And during the court year, during the court period, of course, apparently they came to live in Madison. I don't know how, whether it was an apartment or what, but but on Saturdays I used to go over there and help get their dinner, which they had at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and iron Mr. Doerfler's handkerchiefs sometimes, which had to be done very carefully with the corners matching. And I became very well acquainted with them, and they had a piano, which they let me practice on, and steered me to a piano teacher in the neighborhood. This all just evolved.
Yes.
And so I was, for a while, taking piano lessons from the lady whose name I've forgotten. She wanted the fingers curved very properly.
So well, was piano always strictly a side line?
Yeah, I had been taking lessons back in Milbank and started out at 25 cents. With a high school girl, and I think ended up with a teacher who charged 75 cents. I think she was the only person, no, there were two people in town that had grand pianos. And Viola Berger had gotten me ready to enter a state piano contest. It was a Scarlatti thing. And I was working very hard on that at the time that my mother died. Well, this went out the window too, but I did maintain an interest in music, and it was fun to spend part of my money on my piano lesson in Wauwatosa. So anyway, this acquaintanceship with the Doerflers was a very good part of my life at that period, because the old justice particularly was a very interesting character a good friend. He retired from his justiceship just about the time that I was working for them, and also about the time that I was going to business school. And so he had me come out, and he dictated his letters that he was writing to his friends about his retirement to me. And I typed them up very carefully with took great pains to do them well. You see, about this time I would have been 17 or 18, and he paid me $5, which was great to me. I thought this was a great bonus. So this was the way my life at that time. Working, going to business school, working for my tuition, working for them, taking piano lessons. And then a little later I did go to the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music there for about 2 years till I left Milwaukee.
Full-time?
No.
Just?
Saturdays.
Oh.
And was upstairs to a very good piano teacher by the name of Herman Nutt, N-O-T-T,
mm-hmm.
who gave me some theory and harmony on the side besides the piano lessons. It was great fun. Wonderful.
So what were you, at that time, did you have any expectations of what you would do
no,
in your life?
No. One thing that was missing was setting goals. I just was very busy and very busy learning. So there were no particular goals,
mm-hmm.
except that I did get enough business training to be able to take a job, and at that point the school hired me. Because there, a young woman was leaving who had been doing, I don't know what the job was called. I was the public stenographer,
mm-hmm.
and I also did work for the school, record keeping, and it was a wonderful place to be. It was the kind of school that represented old Milwaukee, I think. The people that ran it, Mrs. Steuerwald and Josephine Wilson, were old-time Milwaukee themselves. And they ran it in a rather elegant way because it was for young women who wanted a business career. And in the summers, they had a course, particularly for college women.
Yeah.
Especially intensive course for college women that wanted to learn typing and shorthand. And many of the old-time Milwaukee families, daughters, would take this course in the summer.
So it was a fun place to be. It's like Katie Gibbs in Boston,
yes,
I suppose, which I think
I guess
was
so,
in the
I guess.
Same tradition.
So this was kind of the atmosphere, a very old building on Wells Street.
Mm.
They did not put money into rent or elegant things in the school,
mm-hmm.
just into the instruction and into their teachers.
So when you finished, you then had a steady job at the school.
I had a job right there, so I... Aside from going out on one job working for the Snow White Garment Company for 2 weeks, taking the place of somebody on vacation,
mm.
I didn't work anywhere else in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed there at the school.
So what is the next stage in your life then?
Well, my aunt, whom I lived with, married, and we moved to a house on 47th Street, which was her new husband's home. His name was Louis Krupp, and he had a toy and novelty store in Milwaukee. Had it for many, many years. So I moved too with her, and we lived there. And then in 1932, the summer of 1932, I had my vacation, which I'd spent in Minneapolis with friends,
mm-hmm.
who were from my hometown and now lived in Minneapolis. And I'd come back to Milwaukee, and the Depression, which had already started before that, had worsened, and in just a very short space of time, the school, which had 200 students, dropped, the enrollment dropped, and they were not getting calls from businessmen in Milwaukee. It had been their pride that businessmen would call at this school whenever they wanted stenographers and secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very respected place for businessmen to get competent help. They were not getting calls from businessmen. This was the only indication I had. I was young and really not even reading the papers much.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that there must have been a great economic depression
mm-hmm,
going on.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware that there was a depression, but not to the extent that it existed. And they had to let teachers go, they had to let me go.
Yes.
So they had to tell me there was no job.
Yes.
And Ms. Foster also, Mrs. Steuerwald, she was a Lucy Stoner, kept her name Ruth Foster as president of the school. Her name was Ruth Foster. Had to tell me that there wasn't a job.
Hmm.
And she said, but you may, we will see that you get the first call that comes in. We'll send you out for the job. Mm-hmm. Well, no calls came in for 2 weeks. So during the period of my 2 weeks notice, no calls came in at all. So I thought, well, this will be a chance for me to go back to school. So I went back to Minneapolis and stayed with my friend in a small apartment there. Friends, really. There was one family that I had lived with after my mother died in Milmay. And Mildred and Donald lived in an old house, an apartment, and they took me in as a third member in the apartment. And instead of what they were paying, we each put $5 a week into the kitty. And I lived there, and Mildred and Donald's married sister, Winifred, who was a good friend in town, was kind of my older sister type. Mm-hmm. And she suggested I go over at the university where she had been working and look for a job, mm-hmm. so that I could enroll in the fall as a student. I thought that was great. So I went to the employment office and got a job and came back, and I said to Winifred, well, I'm going to work for Harold Smith. And she said, why, he's the hardest man in the university to work for. But I did. Mm-hmm. I went to work every morning and learned the ropes on his special bookkeeping system from the young woman that was leaving because she had married and she was going out west. Mm-hmm. And she was very patient with me, and I worked in the engineer's bookstore for several weeks. And there was a little item on the books of 75 cents or something under the name of Llewellyn Pfannkuchen. And I guess I must have giggled over the name. And so I was saying to Harold Smith, my goodness, this funny name on this book, and he owes 75 cents. How come? Harold laughed. Well, this was a very good friend of his. Mm-hmm. They'd grown up together in Minneapolis. And he just kept this on the books as kind of a joke, I guess. Uh-huh. So one day, Llewellyn Pfannkuchen walked into the office. And he'd been teaching at Duke University, and here was the man that owed the 75 yes. cents. And, well, for some reason, we got to know each other. Uh-huh. Before I knew it, I wasn't enrolling in school there. I was coming to Minneapolis, or to Madison, because Llewellyn Pfannkuchen, he had a job in Madison.
Just starting.
Starting that fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see.
By this time, I'd been out at his house and met his mother and told the folks I was living with about him, and he came over there, and they were all astonished that this seemed to be moving along so fast, and I guess I was too. We decided to get married, and yeah. we came to Madison. Hmm. So I never did get to go to school in Minnesota.
Oh, that's it.
And by this time, Malcolm McLean was there at Minnesota, and he had begun his plan to organize a general college. And he was kind of a maverick, and many people on the faculty at Minnesota didn't ever think much of the general college, but I thought then, and I still do, that it was a great idea. Malcolm McLean wanted everybody to be educated to his potential, and he felt that many people just didn't get going in school because of some little quirk that nobody had been able to overcome. And he thought the general college, which would get the very best people on the faculty to teach. And I think it probably had the same ideas as our integrated liberal studies uh-huh. college. At any rate, he did, I don't know whether it's still going over there, but he did get it going, and it performed a good function for quite a while. So this is Llewellyn Pfannkuchen.
Oh,
Laura Smale.
Hello.
Oh, how do you do?
We've only got to 1932.
1932.
We're just...
What is this?
We just got over here.
What is this, an autobiography?
Yeah. Why don't you bring down Freddie Ogg's doctor's gown? And I'll show it to her afterwards.
Where is it?
It's up in the closet.
Which closet?
Closet in your den.
Oh, dear.
And his picture, too. So, let's see now. Where are we?
Well, you've come to Madison, and...
We've just been married. We got married. We were married out at Mound, Minnesota, at the Smith's Cottage. And came here on September 15th. We were married on the 14th, and we got in a little Model A car and stopped overnight at Winona, Minnesota, and came here. And registered at the park, Park Motor Inn down on the square. And that morning, Llewellyn called up the office, political science office. You have to understand, I hadn't even heard the term political science, believe it or not, until I met him that summer. Whatever it was called when I was in high school, it must have been civics or
government
or something like that. But I'd never heard of political science. Isn't that unbelievable?
No.
It's not.
It isn't.
Okay. And so by this time we had to start looking for a house. But he called the office, and Mary Lewis, who was the secretary over there, said, well, there's a whole line of students outside your door. You're their advisor. So he hustled right over there to take care of the students. And as soon as he was through with that, we had to start house hunting, which was quite a thing because we had come on last minute. And we got the University Housing Bureau's list, and I think there were four places left on it which we could possibly afford. Because it had to be not more than $50. We couldn't afford more than that.
Yeah.
And most of them, some places it was 70. One place we looked at on Mendota Court was $70 a month. And you couldn't possibly pay that. That was way too much. But it was the only decent place of all the four. So we went back and looked at one of the others again and thought, well, just possibly we might make do. One we'd written off. I think that would have been $25 a month, but it wasn't ready yet. We went into the address, and the people were sitting around the kitchen table, and they said, well, this will be your living room, we have to fix it up. And your bedroom would be upstairs and you share the bath. Well, we went up to look at the bedroom and it really wasn't in very good shape. And sharing the bath didn't seem too appealing. And the kitchen didn't look very livable right that minute. And so we went back to the $70 place on Mendota Court to look once more. And they still hadn't rented it. And they said, well, you could have it for $50. Well, we took it right away, of course. She was coming down to that. And that's where we lived for our first year.
Did any of the other people in the department help? Did you meet them right away?
No, we didn't because, we didn't think of meeting them.
And they didn't?
And who would we have gone to?
Usually it was, there's a... Maybe it's a myth that the chairman's wife meets you.
Well, she probably would have, but we didn't think to ask anyone. We just went out on our own. Actually, she probably would have because the chairman was Frederick Ogg, and he had met Llewellyn at a meeting. I guess that's how he got the job. He'd been at the meeting, spring meeting probably, the association, and... they had been looking for somebody to bring on in the department, and so it was Mr. Ogg that had brought him on here. But we didn't think about that. We just went to the Housing Bureau and found our own place. I don't know whether she would have really known about any place anyway.
Do you remember how you got acquainted with people in the department?
Well, sure. I'm sure that very soon after we settled in at 21 Mendota Court, they must have had us out.
Mm-hmm.
Because can't remember the first time, but I'm sure that very soon after we settled in, there was one of the monthly meetings of the whole department in those days could meet monthly.
Mm, yes.
The faculty wives and husbands and the graduate students,
you mean,
could all
socially
fit into a house.
Uh-huh.
And so there'd be a meeting and there'd be some topic of discussion, and,
really?
And then there'd be refreshments.
Actually, and the
but
wives,
see,
were included.
The graduate students were not married in those days.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't wives of graduate
no.
students, and I don't believe there were any female graduate students.
But the wives of the faculty wives,
wives
were
of the
included.
Faculty were, sure, they were always included, because when the meetings were at the house, they'd have to get the reset,
yeah.
the refreshments, so they better be included in the meetings.
Do you, was
general.
That interesting to you?
Oh, yes, very. Oh, sure. Yeah. And, of course, it was, well, it was kind of overwhelming at the Oggs, because Mrs. Ogg always prepared a huge collation.
Uh-huh.
She had a maid who had come, a girl from the country that she had trained herself very carefully. And when the maid had to do extra work, like at a time of a meeting like this, she would call in her friend who worked for the Greeleys next door.
Mm.
The maid, the Greeleys' maid, and I suppose when the Greeleys had big parties, they would call on Mrs. Sowers' maid.
Wasn't
sure.
there a hood on this?
Yeah, there's a hood up in the box.
I can't find it.
How you'll have to do your mechanics, because this is a duet. Are you recording us?
Well, I just, it's a, as I say, I find this notion
right.
of the meetings very really quite unusual. I've never heard of it. One hears of social meetings, dinner parties and things.
The very first meeting, that they were all male graduate students, and nobody, none of them married. There weren't any female graduate students, were there?
No, not right at first, but they came in quite soon.
They did? Like who? Yeah.
Well, I could look in my, let me get through here.
I don't know that you can.
Well, I'll, Mrs. Arag always had sandwiches and dessert and coffee and probably tea. And anyway, the table looked absolutely filled with food. A huge table and a huge dining room.
Mm.
A big house with a huge study. And Mr. Arag had three desks always that he kept going. One for as editor of the Political Science Review, one is, I suppose, department work that he took home, and the third desk would be for his book.
That's Helen. Helen White did that too.
Did she?
I've heard about that. That's a,
he was always revising his Ogg and Ray book,
mm-hmm.
and he would have ideas for revisions taped up on the shelves above the desk.
Yeah.
With, so there was always these three ongoing things in his study. And then a huge living room filled with things that students had given them, a lot of Chinese. He always had a great many Chinese students.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be lots of Chinese cloisonne and Chinese objet d'art around.
Did you find this overawing when you went? I mean, you were very young to begin with.
Oh, I think at first probably. Yeah, very. Mrs. Ogg was, I think she always took the new wives under her wing. And she took me very soon. Oh, I bet it was the second month we'd been here, not the first. the League of Women Voters in those days always had an orientation tea.
Mm-hmm.
And she took me to that one that fall at Mrs. Schorger's, right in the same University Heights neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Arg paid my dues. I don't think she asked me if I wanted to be a member.
And did you?
Well, it never occurred to me.
You mean,
I was.
I got some pay dirt here.
Okay.
This is a list of PhDs in the department. And the first one is in 1943. C-I-T-A. Mrs. H.T. Yeh Hu, a study of the Farm Security Administration is applicable to China's problem.
So that was a female graduate student.
Yeah.
Well, I must 36. Just have confused the students.
Let's see
with
how
the
early I can get. Well, Bill Farber never did marry.
No, he isn't married now. He's in South Dakota. Been there for years. He was in the Air Force, but he's always been a bachelor.
Chilton Bush was married, 35. Jasper Shannon was married, 1934. Lee Green was married. I'm quite sure Fitzgibbon was married, but this is before we...
You mean when they first came here? Well...
Who? Fitzgibbon?
No, Lee Green.
Well, I don't know, but he was married when he got his degree.
They just had, well, they did just have their 50th anniversary, so he was married in 33.
Yeah, that's okay.
She always paid a lot of attention to her house. And she always said she could upholster, but she couldn't sew. She loved to hammer and upholster, but she didn't like to make slipcovers. This was the kind of faculty wife activity.
What kinds of papers did they give at the monthly meetings?
I mean,
were they talking
anymore.
About political affairs?
Well, one of them, this fellow talked about milk, the milk industry.
Well,
graduate students would give papers sometimes, and I can't tell you. I think I must have been, my mind must have been
that.
Elsewhere.
Well,
on the food, maybe.
My impression was that usually staff members gave programs, or else there was a visitor, visiting dignitary. I didn't take graduate students.
Not ever?
Hmm.
I don't remember.
Well, they held forth, and they were allowed to participate.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what did they give papers on?
They did not give papers.
I mean faculty. What did they give papers on?
Well, usually it was a report when somebody had been away.
Oh, uh-huh.
Rather than a scholarly paper.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, so it wasn't
actually, they were not. They were more... Actually, I think the purpose of them was to keep the whole department kind of in communication, and it was social.
I see.
Yeah.
That's
it was really a very good thing, and there was lots of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I remember more than anything, I think.
Yeah.
Just having good conversations with people.
We all got acquainted with one another.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was a pretty close department, was it?
Yes. Well, there were only seven full-time people in the department when we came, and we were the seventh.
And everybody liked each other. There weren't any mavericks.
Let me see. Yeah, I guess that's right. I guess that's right.
We stayed here, even though the first thing that came in the mail, I think, was notice that Llewellyn had waived, what percent of your salary was
10%.
It? 10% of his salary.
Oh, yes, that's just when that happened, isn't it?
Yeah, so what was it? Instead of $2,000, we got
$1,800? Yeah.
Instead of $2,000 for the year, it was $1,800 for the year. But I could go over to University Avenue and come home with a huge bag of groceries that had only cost $5.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have company and have leftovers and eat all week on it for
$5.
Yeah. So actually, the prices were not as
no,
great
of course
either.
Not.
Yeah.
There was some bitterness about that because Glenn Frank didn't take the waiver on his salary, I think.
Oh, he didn't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, this, you see, was above me. I wouldn't have known. But we knew about Glenn Frank. And you mentioned John Goss being here, and he was very close friends of Governor La Follette.
Uh-huh.
And we were here in the period just before Glenn Frank left. He was the president the first year we came here. And then by the second year, he was out, wasn't he?
No, I can't.
No, he.
But here's 30, one of those date things.
Like, was when he
not
was
not until 36.
Oh,
well,
that's right. That's right.
Okay, then he was here. You see, we came fall of 33, so 34 and 35, we were here the whole year.
Uh huh.
And so then the next year he was out. Okay.
Yeah. Most of this controversy took place when I was in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The first time. And
oh, well, this is then why I don't remember it either.
Yeah.
So, but I do remember, you see, the president's wife then probably did more entertaining in the president's house.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in Olin House.
Mm.
The Franks. You know, there was
the
no Brittingham House at that time.
No,
it was the
it
Olin.
Was up on the up
yes,
in University
that
Heights.
Was the president's house.
Yes.
So when you speak of the president's house, that would be the one for that period. And Mrs. Frank did entertain there for faculty wives, University League.
I have the impression that the invitation list was restricted in Frank's time. We never had an opportunity to meet.
Well, not for University League, Llewellyn.
University League.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at it from the distaff side, you see.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
I'm not...
Well, maybe I ought to go out and
probably
get some groceries.
Get some half and half.
Did you know about the experimental... I mean, did you have anything to do with the experimental college? Did you have any views? It was just ending, I guess, when you came. But it's been a subject of lively interest...
Oh,
and John Goss was brought here because of the experimental college.
Well, you get in your whatever you remember about that. It would be interesting.
Well, the experimental college was either ended or ending when we came.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But there were still a lot of people around who stayed on after it.
Yeah, Goss was one. Agard was another.
Carl Bigholt.
Yes.
Paul Rauschenbusch.
Was another, and Paul Rauschenbusch.
Who wasn't on the faculty after that, was he? Or was he?
I don't know.
Somebody else. Can't remember.
And at the time of the establishment of the Course in Integrated Liberal Studies, the people who we're still here from Experimental College. Of course, it's all supported this idea.
Yeah.
And Ogg's Curriculum Committee it was divided on the question of establishing the Integrated Liberal Studies Program, which they finally did recommend and which the faculty finally did approve. And
was Max Otto part of that, or not?
I don't think so.
No.
Maybe
he'd
not.
Been on
Maybe
the
not.
Faculty before.
I don't think
oh.
so.
Oh, started. Because he was here,
well,
and I audited his course that first semester.
I talked with Ogg fairly frequently about this. Mrs. Ogg had died, and on the maid's night out, he
this
ate
was
out,
later.
And
much
he,
later.
And he wanted company, and he was in the middle of this, and. So he talked about his problems.
Mm.
I was junior enough so that I wouldn't talk around
yes.
about it. And the argument, I think, that finally led him to support the establishment of integrated liberal studies was that there were enough people on the faculty who would be interested enough to themselves participate in the program mm-hmm. To make it go. And some of those, in private discussions, you know, by which I mean non-committee discussions, it was clear who some of these people were, and they were a distinguished list. And it was on this basis that the recommendation was made, and the faculty adopted it, although there was a lot of opposition. The Experimental College was quite unpopular.
Yes.
Well, unpopular.
It was unpopular
in some areas.
Among a very considerable number.
Well, that's always true. Well, and that I was telling her about Malcolm McLean's General College in Minnesota.
Yeah.
This is always true of something like that. You pioneer in something like that, and it's uphill, and it's a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think that Historical Society article, that Wisconsin History Magazine article.
Yeah, that's a good piece.
Yeah, points that up.
Yeah.
Bound to happen.
Yeah.
Because especially when you have ties with the people in the state who think the university's weird anyway, and then when you get something even weirder going on over there, why my goodness!
I've heard some question of the scholarship of some of the faculty that were brought here for the Experimental College. That is, that they were good, interesting teachers, but were not all of them outstanding scholars. And I'd be curious, because that one doesn't hear that criticism very much.
Well,
I've never heard that criticism.
One thing is clear, that while they were involved in the Experimental College, they didn't have time to be scholars.
Mm.
There was too much individual consultation.
Mm.
There was absolutely no time.
They had to be teachers.
They had to be teachers. The idea of the Experimental College was teaching.
Yes. And constant exposure to the teacher.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell it from two students' viewpoint, because I met them in Milwaukee before I left there, and they were part of the X College. One was Bud Obma, who became a very well-known photographer over in Dodgeville over here, and the other was Cuthbert Francis, whose aim was to be a Methodist bishop. What he did with himself, I don't know. But they were part of a little Methodist young people's group that I got into in Milwaukee. And they were just crazy about the Experimental College. And they talked about, they were just so full of it that they got this whole group talking about Socrates' death and whether or not he willingly took the poison. And this got into a very dialectic discussion. But it was fascinating because these two fellows they thought the Experimental College was great.
Well, I never encountered a student at the Experimental College that did not think it was great.
Uh-huh. So you see, there's that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I was identified with integrated liberal studies, so I probably would not hear from students that did not like the Experimental College having been in it. You see, because there was no doubt that, in a sense, the integrated liberal studies program was the heir of the Experimental College.
Without its exclusiveness.
I
certainly imagine the students of the college would have liked it because they knew what they were getting into and they chose it.
They wanted to get a broad education, obviously, and weren't geared specifically to go to working for some corporation or something. They wanted to get their education, and except for Cuthbert Francis, who knew what he wanted to do. I don't know whether Bud Oldman knew that he wanted to be a photographer. I doubt it. But he became a very good photographer. Anyway, that's the kind of atmosphere that we came into at first. There certainly was a lot of the feeling of the ex-college around still, even though it was it either had folded or was on its way out. You couldn't be in groups around the campus without encountering this overflow, I think. Might have been different in the engineering college and some of the other colleges that wouldn't have been as close to it as some of the other different letters
people
and science.
Would talk about it, or their conversation would be influenced by the theories of the college? That is, that there would be more of the...
Well, both, I think.
Great both. Books discussion group kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, I think both. Both things. So that was interesting.
Well, I think I'll get the groceries.
Well, you're a lucky wife if your husband goes and gets the groceries.
Well, I need to walk.
Yeah,
so you're lucky too.
I also like to get certain groceries.
Well, glad you could lend your expertise to this.
Yes. Oh, I didn't realize what the real topic was here.
Well, we're just exploring that, aren't we?
Yeah,
what the real topic is?
Yes, I guess.
I think.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know what...
Well, I'm curious as to what... I hope this has picked up both of you. You say right away the first semester you audited a course.
Yeah, I think it was that very first semester I went over and audited Max Otto's course.
How did you know enough to do that?
Well, I'd heard a lot.
Well, things get around pretty fast.
That he was a great teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. And I enjoyed it very much. It was, it opened new doors, and I had... oh dear, this is a blank. I can see him, and I can't. A person who became famous nationally in philosophy as the instructor in the sections. Oh dear, this is dreadful.
Well, anyway, his name will come to you, I'm sure.
Maybe. Anyway, I really enjoyed his lectures, and an interesting light on that is.
I'll be back.
Yeah, during that year, we went back to Milwaukee and. Just for a visit one weekend, I still had relatives there, and I took Llewellyn over to the Durfers so that he could meet Mr. and Mrs. Durfer. And Mr. Durfer had died by that time, but Mrs. Durfer was interested in knowing what we were doing over here, and was a very gracious hostess to us. And then I told her that I was auditing Max Otto's course in philosophy.
Yeah.
And she just blew up. She said, oh, what a thing to be doing. If we would only talk to the right people over here, we would find out that he was not such a highly regarded philosopher.
Oh,
and all these years I've gotten a kick out of thinking of that. Because to me at that time, her remark was ununderstandable. I didn't know what she meant because I didn't know the other philosophers. I didn't know philosophy. All I knew was that I thought Max Otto was a great lecturer, and I just loved his ideas. And
well, was it politically motivated? I mean, was she thinking,
I don't think so. I think she was just thinking that he was, kind of an iconoclast in philosophy.
Mm.
There certainly were other philosophers who might not have liked his ideas, I'm sure. And I bought Things and Ideals at the bookstore and read it, thought it was great. And his ideas about man and nature were, to me, very stimulating and very realistic and good. So that was my first encounter on the Hill. And then I decided I would go back and get some credits. And so I enrolled in the university and took...
You didn't take a job right away?
Here?
Yeah.
No.
Did you think of it?
No, why should I?
Well, I just wondered. I mean, you had been working.
Yeah, well, it's nice not to be.
So that was your feeling, was that it was nice not to have to work.
I'm a lazy person.
Uh-huh.
Had all I could do just to keep house and... Well, actually, really and truly, I had intended to go to school, you see, at Minnesota.
Yes.
And so when I came here, here was this marvelous opportunity just 3 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big advantages of our apartment was that it was right at the bottom of the hill. We just, Dean Bardeen of the medical school lived in a house on one side, Rabbi Kadushin across, and all of the people that lived around there were right walking distance of the campus.
Yeah.
And people didn't use cars nearly as much. We parked our little Model A in a garage. Wouldn't have thought of leaving it on the street. It's too precious.
Uh-huh.
I think we paid $2 a month to rent a garage.
Oh, that was high.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't have to pay for a telephone. That was out in the hall. No utilities, just $50 a month. So at any rate, I had planned to enroll in school.
Mm-hmm. And what did you? That. What did you?
In fact, I wasn't. I hadn't decided, but I hadn't thought about it. Hadn't thought of becoming part of organizations or anything like that.
Yeah.
A very sweet, white-haired lady called on me right off from University Dames.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it and told her that I didn't think I'd have time to belong to Dames.
So is that, that's the same as the league, is that
no, right? No, University Dames, I don't know if it's still going. I think it is. No, it was a different organization from the league. There should be a record of it around somewhere. It was a quite different organization.
You had 21 credits, so you had the equivalent of
21 credits.
More than a year, or
no,
how did it work out?
I don't know. But I enrolled then in medieval history and an English course. And medieval history was great. It was Robert Reynolds, Sr., and he was just a marvelous teacher.
Why were you were you going to major in history?
I was telling you, I didn't have goals. I just wanted to fulfill requirements, and these were some things available that looked interesting.
I see. But you...
The English was something I had to have credits in at that time to work toward a BA.
But, I mean, if you were going to take a BA, you had to major in something.
Oh, but not at that level.
I see, you were still freshman.
No, I was still
sophomore.
A freshman.
Okay.
After all, just 21 credits was all I had.
Right. All right.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't have to worry about that for a while. And frankly, I didn't know how to study. I found I didn't know how to study. I think the first exam I did, I got a C. And here I was. You know, I was the valedictorian of my little 50-member high school class. Supposed to be smart. And I got a C in medieval history, and I loved it.
Yes.
Thought I knew everything required for the exam.
Well,
I obviously didn't. It was a shock. So I found out how to study, and I got along all right after that. And then by the end of that semester, I was very pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And, oh yes, I had taken a elementary German course, too. Well, those were the first three things I took, English, German, and history. And when I found I was pregnant, this was kind of a surprise at first. So one of the other women in the apartment house, Ella Thettinger, whose husband was a graduate student, and they later went up to Oshkosh, where he was on the faculty, she told me that there was a doctor on the campus by the name of Dr. Harris, who was an excellent OB person. So I went to Dr. Harris, and he confirmed my suspicions, which were a little more than suspicions by that time. And David was born in August 1933. So about that time, the end of that summer, we were trying to decide whether that apartment would accommodate a baby, and we decided it wouldn't because there would have been no way to get a baby bath into the bathroom, which was right off the front parlor, this being a made-over house, right next to the fireplace, and barely had room for the necessary facilities.
Yeah.
And my uncle from Milwaukee was very portly, couldn't make it into the bathroom. The door was very narrow, and the toilet was right in front of the door, and he had great difficulty. And then the kitchen, which was the other possibility, was so drafty that as I thought about trying to bathe a little baby in the kitchen, was no use. So we began looking for another place to live. And at that point, Llewellyn ran into Bill Rice on the campus, and they were going off to Geneva. Bill being in international relations and international law in the law school, and Llewellyn teaching international law and political science. We had become acquainted. And then Llewellyn had known friends of Rosamund Rice's when he was in the East. And so we had gone over to their house and called on them before that. And I think, interesting from the woman's point of view, Rosamund had asked me right off what were my interests outside of house.
Yes.
And if it hadn't been for Mrs. Arg, I don't know whether I would have at that point had any special interests except trying to get back to school. But I could say League of Women Voters.
Going back to school wasn't enough of
an
interest?
And Rosamund Rice was, well, Rosamund was interested in the League and I think a member of the League. And so we did have that in common. But at any rate, they wanted to rent their house for a few months while they were away. And so we moved into their house from this apartment.
Yeah.
And we're in the house at the time that David was born and until the following January.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the experience of living in a house. And like Mrs. Ag, Mrs. Rice had a maid, a girl from Sauk City, whom I had got acquainted with and saw later on many times. In fact, saw her in just last winter, kind of out of the blue, as I was working as a jury commissioner over at the courthouse, and she and her husband came into the courthouse. One of them had been called for jury duty and couldn't make it, but they came in and they had noticed my name on the letter that had come out and came in specially to see me. After all those years, they remembered being over at the house, the Rice's house, in the winter.
Sure.
And she said, and I've forgotten what his name is, you asked him to stay overnight because there was a blizzard and it was so icy. This was before they'd been married. And I didn't remember this at all, but they still remembered it. And they thought this was great.
Yeah.
My goodness, what could you do? You couldn't let someone go out into the blizzard all the way back to Sauk City. So this is part of my early memory and a pleasant part.
How much did Llewellyn talk to you about his work, and did you help him at all? Did you do typing for him or research or anything like that?
Well, fortunately, he had his PhD, so I didn't get in on typing the thesis, which many faculty wives did, of course. I ran into many wives who had typed their husband's theses. Well, he talked a lot about problems on campus. And, I can't remember any of it now, but he talked quite a bit about his work. And then he was working on a textbook, a documentary textbook in international law.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a copy of it right up there, it's that brown thing there.
Oh, yes.
I did quite a bit of typing on that.
You did?
And read galley proofs, and by the time the thing was in galley proofs, we were living on Lakeside Street in a little house that, intervening, there had also been an apartment residence for a while, until David got big enough to crawl around, and I was afraid he'd fall down the three flights of stairs or something. And at that point, I met Setsy Pooley, another faculty wife, in the elevator at Manchester's, and she said, "Don't you want to rent a house? We built our house in Frost Woods, and we want to move from Lakeside Street." And I said, "Sure." So we looked at the house and rented it. All of these needs, you see, developed because of the child coming.
Yes, yeah.
So then we had a house, a little house, and bought her stove, and had a meager amount of furniture to move into it. Llewellyn's upright piano came on from Minneapolis. She found somebody that would move it for $1 all the way from Minneapolis.
My goodness.
And his uncle, who is in the moving business, moved it into the house and wouldn't charge us anything. See how economic-minded I am of those early years. Everything is geared to how much it costs to do.
Yeah.
The house cost either $45 or $50 a month, but then we had to pay heat.
Mm.
And this was a very drafty little house where the plumbing froze in the winter.
Mm.
So that you had icicles under the bathtub faucet in the winter if it got below zero at all. Well, we stayed in that house 3-4 years, and I plugged away at school. Then I
even
did work.
After the baby was born.
Oh yeah.
You continued. Did Llewellyn help very much with housework and baby and?
Let's not get into that.
Well, then he didn't, I guess.
No, I don't.
Well, I mean, after all, this is the 30s, and men didn't, so it's nothing for the most part.
It would have been very foreign to him to do things like that.
So you had to get a babysitter when you...
This is very chaotic. We moved to the Rice's house. We were there until January. Then we were in the apartment on Johnson Street, Winona Apartments. A very, very nice, efficient apartment with lots of room on the third floor. And Ruth Foster then worked in student health. She's still a doctor in town. She was then married to Mark Foster, who was in zoology,
mm-hmm.
and later went back and became a doctor. And at any rate, she was downstairs, and whenever I had to, when I thought there was an emergency with the baby, and once when I borrowed a rectal thermometer, I would run down to see her.
Uh-huh.
And became well acquainted with her, and she's still my doctor. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yes.
There's continuity here in this community.
I should say so.
So, the apartment, which is no longer there, I think it's either Og or Whitty Hall, is on that property. This perfectly good apartment building had to be torn down.
Mm.
At any rate, moving into the house on Lakeside. One of the first things that happened there was that the doorbell rang and there was a telegram from me from the Federal Civil Service saying that there was a job in Washington.